it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
And hello once again. Welcome to another edition of the Hockey News on the Cue. It's episode 4 for us. I'm Will McLaren. He's Jamie Tozer. And this is a rare opportunity in that we are actually within probably about 15 minutes drive from one another. I'm in my humble abode in Coal Harbor, home to a couple of well-known Cue alumni. And Jamie, you're over in Halifax for a couple of days and got to see a little bit of hockey in the process. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the game on Sunday, kind of what I think we probably expected going in, not much of a contest between an extremely shorthanded St. John team and a very good Halifax team. Probably one of the most shorthanded Sea Dogs team I can remember in terms of injury loss. Catastrophic amount of injuries to go up against a Halifax team. So not surprising to see the result 7-0. But I honestly, it probably could have been worse. So honestly, a pretty respectable showing by the Sea Dogs lineup that did play.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, in a year in which depth isn't exactly the calling card for the Sea Dogs, of course, you know, rebuilding from a Memorial Cup triumph last year to virtually have almost every player of significance from that run at a lineup, whether it's Nicholas Hurtubise in net or, you know, your Brady Burns's, your Cam McDonald's, and, you know, the list goes on. It's definitely a tough string for the Sea Dogs. And I agree, you know, 7-0, it's, if anything, it, you know, might be, you know, the Dogs don't look at it this way, but, you know, maybe a little bit flattering from the standpoint of the mismatch on the ice. You know, they kept it close. It's 2-0, I believe, after the first period. So, you know, they did what they could. And on the third game of a Maritime road trip as well. But before that, of course, they were in Cape Breton. Ended up losing 4-0 to the Eagles, who've now won 2 straight, which is happening not a moment too soon for that franchise after winning just one of their first 10 games. That was a special night in Sydney, Nova Scotia. We'll get to that in a little while. But first of all, we'll just focus on the Eagles in general. A couple of big wins. Not only did they have that 4-0 win against St. John on Saturday, but they also had a 5-3 win against the provincial rivals from Halifax. The Mooseheads went up to Centre 200 and ended up with a rare regulation loss in their column. But Eagles with that first regulation win of the season and getting some contributions from, first of all, at least one newcomer and another guy who we haven't heard much of leading into this part of the season.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a quiet year for everyone's favorite Ivan Squared, or Ivan or Yvonne, depending on your pronunciation guide. But yeah, great to see a strong performance for him. Been a, like you said, a quiet start to the year, but a 4-assist night and probably the Eagles' biggest game of the year. That was great to see. And Will, you called this. I mean, you pretty much, you didn't really call out a win, but you said the Eagles were probably going to have a good showing in this game, and you were right.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you don't want to make it sound like you know exactly what you're talking about, but at the end of the day, it was a key game. You know, coming off a tough road trip through Quebec, something had to give, and sometimes those provincial rivalry games are just the tonic, and thankfully for them, it was. And, you know, also a little bit of shakeup in the Eagles lineup. Zachary Gravel was traded, 20-year-old, off to Chicoutimi to make way for another 20-year-old coming from the WHL and defenseman Trevor Thurston. He scored his first goal in the QMJHL in that 5-3 win against Halifax. I was watching that game, actually, and certainly not looking at a place. I don't think Thurston was brought in really as a big offensive catalyst by any stretch of the imagination, but he could certainly pound the puck, and he rifled one past Brady James in the Halifax net for that one. And you know, talking about Ivan, you know, his role continued on Saturday night. 2 points in that victory over the Sea Dogs. Olivier Chatney, you know, he's got two wins as a Cape Breton Screaming Eagle, and both of them are shutouts now. You know, 24 saves for him as well. So the Eagles hopefully getting on a bit more of a roll here. They're taking on Bathurst on Tuesday. We're recording this on Monday night. And then it's Charlottetown Thursday, Friday for a home-and-home. And back home against Chicoutimi on Sunday. So a very busy week for Cape Breton. Another team of note. Got to talk a little bit about the Drummond Voltigeurs as well, who very quietly, Jamie, I would say, have ended up with a 7-3 record in their last 10 games. They are in a very contentious Western Conference. They are doing everything in their power to climb up the standings.
Yeah, and we've talked a little bit about Drummondville in the past with Tyler Peddle, and you know, a bit of an interesting team. They've got some notable guys, but just still not quite there yet, I don't think. But yeah, good to see them kind of picking up some momentum. And I think for us in particularly, we're kind of paying attention a little bit because they've got the Maritime road trip coming up. But yeah, you know, Peddle, a good performance. And they're finally getting some goaltending as well. You know, Jacob Gooby, who hasn't maybe not quite lived up to expectations so far in his Q career, but he's certainly having a pretty good year here, and a strong win beating a very good Sherbrooke team. So that's a huge win for them. And I'm sure a big confidence boost for them heading into the later half of this first half.
You know, we talked about Gatineau with the injury troubles, which continue to this point. Well, Drummondville, you pretty much put them in the same bucket, Jamie. You know, three key guys. We talked about in net with Jacob Gooby. Gooby, you know, the focus is really on him right now because, of course, Riley Mercer, who had a fantastic start to the season, he's out 4 to 6 weeks with a lower body injury. Mm-hmm. And you've got, of course, Maverick Lamoureux, first-round pick of the Arizona Coyotes last year. He's out for a month or two. Justin Côté as well, one of their top scorers for the last couple of years, out for another month or two. So, you know, definitely Drummondville doing the best they can to stay afloat in the Western Conference, but certainly having to find some creative ways to do it, given mm-hmm. some of the personnel that's out of the lineup.
Yeah, and you know, I believe they have Kevin Broussard, who picked up a win on over Schwinnigan. That's a real journeyman goalie. He's played in just about everywhere he can play over the past few years. So good to see him pick up a win and maybe find some opportunity when he has a chance to play and perform. So good for him to see him pick up a win.
Yeah, for sure. So the Volts, as you mentioned, Jamie, in the Maritimes this coming weekend, and it's a 3-3, too. Those are always fun. All through New Brunswick, they're in Moncton on Friday night, St. John Saturday night, and then capping it off in Bathurst on Sunday afternoon. And we're going to turn our attention back to the Cape Breton Eagles, one of two teams that are going to come up in prominence here in this next section. Because we had a couple of number retirements in the queue over the weekend in Cape Breton. It was Chris Culligan. His number 7 went up to the rafters at Center 200 on Saturday night. He was a 5-year guy in Cape Breton. He's got 364 regular season and playoff games under his belt. Part of one of the, actually the biggest run that the Eagles have had in the postseason to date. That was to Game 7 of the 2007 QMJHL semifinals, went to UMB, was a winner there, came back as an assistant coach with the Eagles for a number of years, handed in his resignation over the summer, but still very much a notable name and an impactful factor for this Eagles franchise.
Yeah, and I love this because if you're a hockey fan in the Maritimes over the past decade, you know who Chris Culligan is. But outside the Maritimes, you probably don't. And it's cool to see someone who's not a superstar who didn't go on to NHL stardom but meant so much to a franchise, to see him recognized and see him have his number retired, was a terrific junior player. And I remember him well from his days at UMB. I was going to UMB at the same time he was playing there. Captained UMB for a couple years, and if you're captaining UMB for a couple years, that means you're a pretty elite player. So really cool to see someone get recognized like that, who means so much to a franchise and a Sydney product at that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it kind of opens up the conversation about, you know, number of retirements, who could we see have it happen to them with the various franchises in the queue. And there's it almost seems like every team has their own mantra, and Cape Breton definitely going the local route. We've seen it on occasion with other teams. One of the ones that comes to mind immediately is Rimouski retiring Jonathan Beaulieu's number. He captained their Memorial Cup winning team in 2000, a name that would not be well known to most mm-hmm. fans in the queue, especially fans in the queue nowadays. Yep. But his numbers in the draft are in the rafters there. And there's a few examples of that throughout the league. Sam Lang, who played for Gatineau back in the back then, they were still Hull back in the 70s. He's another one. Never won much. That was before really the heyday of the Olympic, but still a meaningful player in the eyes of the franchise. So from that standpoint, I couldn't agree with you more, Jamie. It was just nice to see a guy who meant a lot to that franchise, regardless of whatever happened to him beyond his career. He didn't necessarily have to play pro, and Chris had a cup of coffee in the pro ranks, in the minor mm-hmm. pros, but that wasn't the basis for this. It was what he meant to the franchise, and that kind of holds, I think, in my opinion, now a little bit more weight on some level. The other retirement is a guy that a few more people would know, especially people who are of a certain vintage, and I don't want to give away my age, as I do more often than not on this program, but yeah, I remember this guy. And that's Marc Denis, who had his number 33 retired by the Chicoutimi Saguenay also on Saturday night. He spent three years in Chicoutimi from 94 to 97, helped lead that team to a Memorial Cup appearance in 97 with Chicoutimi. They were the second QMJHL entry that year, the President Cup winning Hull team, who went on to win the Memorial Cup as well as be the host team. They were the other Q representatives that year. Very first draft pick in Colorado Avalanche history after they moved to Quebec. First rounder, 25th overall. I'll never forget him being drafted, and the Avalanche didn't have their jerseys created at that point. He actually wore an NHL logoed oh, wow. jersey for his draft wow. picture. And, you know, he was out of Colorado fairly quickly, only a brief appearance there, but went on to a long career with Columbus, Tampa, Montreal, even for a couple of games. But the thing that I always remember with Marc Denis is the World Juniors, and particularly 97. It's hard to believe, but back then, you know, we don't see it nearly as much now. But back then, you know, Quebec really was the goaltender factory, quote unquote, mm-hmm. in the junior hockey ranks, and it seemed to be one coming down the pipe every year. And you know, whether it was Eric Fichaud or José Théodore or Stéphane Fissé, well, Marc Denis was almost kind of towards the end of that line. There was Roberto Luongo after him, but after that, it just wasn't quite as prevalent to have the Quebec guys in net virtually every World Junior. But the performance he put on in 1997, in Geneva, when Canada won their fifth gold in a row, was just legendary. A 2-0 shutout against the Americans in the final. But you know, for a guy like Marc Denis, you know, I kind of wondered, you know, why didn't this happen sooner? I know it's the 50th anniversary up there, and that's part of the festivities. But you know, maybe a little bit overdue, but certainly great to see Marc Denis get his due in Chicago.
Yeah, and I actually learned a lot from listening to you, because Marc Denis is a little before my time of following the queue. So thank you for that insight. And I certainly remember him playing more in the NHL than in junior. So, and I believe he's a broadcaster now.
He is, so, yes.
Yeah, so yeah. Great to see him get recognized. But you bring up an interesting point, too, because a guy like Marc Denis is kind of the opposite of Chris Culligan, who went on to have a long pro career, played a lot in the NHL. Kind of brings up the question, you know, when should junior players get their number retired? Should they get them retired shortly after they leave their junior team, or should they get it when their career's completely done? Which I think is kind of an interesting little debate.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, we've seen it from franchise to franchise. It can sometimes depend on the mentality of the franchise and how they want to do it. Sometimes it's situational. You know, we, you know, down here in Halifax, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion based on previous history with, you know, Jean-Sébastien Jaeger, Jody Shelley, Alex Tanguay already up in the rafters here. It's only a matter of time before 22 goes up in the rafters for Nathan MacKinnon, 27 for Jonathan Drouin, maybe even 31 for Zach Fucali. We'll see what goes on. But sometimes it's just a matter of when you can get those guys in town too. That's especially the ones that have had a long-standing pro career. And, you know, you being in the St. John area, Jamie, I know that there's a few guys that are probably on your list of names you'd like to see or numbers you'd like to see up in the TD station rafters as well. I think every team might have one or two of those guys, but St. John, they have yet to retire a number.
Yeah, and the Citos, it's a little interesting because they've established a Hall of Fame, and Jonathan Huberto's in there, Mike Thomas is in there. You know, guys who are very well-known Sea Dogs and certainly are worthy of having the number retired. And no player after Jonathan Huberto has worn number 11. No player after Mike Thomas has worn number 17. And Alex Grant as well, who was the first draft pick in Sea Dogs history. No player has worn number 20 after Alex Grant. So those numbers are kind of unofficially retired, but they haven't been retired. So I think you kind of have to assume that those numbers will be retired at some point, even with the establishment of the Hall of Fame. But I guess it'll just be a matter of time as to when. You know, Thomas, his playing career is done, and he's involved with the alumni, with the Sea Dogs, and was heavily involved at the Memorial Cup, and bringing a lot of those guys back. Grant's still in the KHL, and we know where Huberto is. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with those guys and when the Sea Dogs decide to hang those numbers up.
It's almost kind of like a Toronto Maple Leafs mentality, and I mean that in the nicest way possible, don't get me wrong, you know, for years, the Leafs, they had very few retired jerseys, but they had honored numbers, you know, a guy like Bill Barilko or Ace Bailey, guys who had their careers cut short, they were retired, but, you know, a lot of the guys, the Sittlers, the Mahovliches, the Keons, they simply had theirs honored. And maybe in a way that's kind of what the Sea Dogs are doing, at least for now. You know, they're taking those numbers out of circulation and say bide their time, but they're just waiting for what they feel is the appropriate time to put those numbers up. You know, and I look, you know, I spent many years in Moncton. Apparently, Corey Crawford is supposed to be getting his number 29 retired.
Okay.
At some point. And the only reason I know that is actually by going to the league media guide. It was slated for retirement last year. It's now slated for retirement at some unknown point this year. Whether that's the case or not, don't take my word for it. I'm just basically going by what's in the media guide. His number 29 has been worn since he left. Roman Will wore it in 2011-2012 as the first name that comes to my mind. So there's another situation, you know, besides a guy like Crawford, who presumably is going to get his retired soon, you know, maybe a Connor Garland. If you follow that that rationale of guys who went on to substantial NHL careers, who started in Moncton, who had that sort of background. You look at other teams, you know, one thing I did not know until going through the media guide, the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies. They're set to retire a number. They already have guys like Mike Ribeiro in the rafters now, but they're retiring the number of Marc-André Bourdon. And Marc-André Bourdon was a defenseman who had, I believe, a bit of a pro career after he left probably about 15 years ago. It's been 15 years at least since he's been in the queue. But he was a lifelong Husky, and I believe he was part of the first team that made the President Cup final back in 2008. And it makes me wonder, you know, maybe up there we see a guy like Philip Myers or a guy like Raphael Harvey-Pinard, who were part of President Memorial Cup winning teams, see their names in the rafters. I think in Shawinigan, I think it's a very safe bet. You'll see Xavier Borgol, who we're going to talk a little bit more about in a couple of seconds, or Maverick Bork have their numbers in the rafters. So it's interesting. To your point, Jamie, it seems to be, it depends on what franchise you talk to or what the mentality is and what they base their rationale on. It's definitely, it's interesting to watch because these ceremonies, you know, they're meant to be rare. They're meant to be special. And sometimes what makes them special is just the rationale behind, you know, what got us here in the first place. Why did the team decide now and this player? It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. And I like that teams kind of do their own thing, because I think we're kind of in a time now where a lot of teams, a lot of franchises, they all kind of do the same thing. So it's cool to see teams really going different routes with number retirements. And you know, you mentioned some names there. Boy, there's a lot of guys for the past 20 years in the queue probably worthy of having their number retired. So it'll be cool to see what happens with a lot of those guys as their professional career slowly come to an end over the next 10 years or so.
Yeah. Also of note too, just a quick note, a couple of other retirements that are supposedly slated for this year, according to the Quebec League media guy, Thomas Beauregard up in Bathurst. He had a 71 goal season up there, still the last guy to score 70 in the queue to this point. His number's getting retired in Bathurst this year. I think you'll see Matthew Perreault retired at some point. Bathurst is a big fan of retiring numbers. That goes back to their Laval days. Yep. And Steve Gosselin, another Chicoutimi Saguenay, who was just a little bit before Marc Denis' time, the early 90s. He won a President Cup with that team in 1994. He's also slated, as well as Bourdon, perhaps Crawford, and in Gatineau for their 50th anniversary. They will be honoring Alain Vigneault and Benoit Grue, a pair of former head coaches.
And a lot of those jerseys retirements lining up with team anniversaries too. Bathurst celebrating anniversary, Chicoutimi. So it's kind of a link there to maybe a hint of when some teams might retire some jerseys in the future.
Yeah, no, there's a lot, whole lot of methods to a whole lot of madness sometimes, and it's going to be great to see all of those gentlemen honored as they are rightfully deserved to be. Let's talk about a few players around the league, Jamie. You know, there are guys this year who we both expected they're going to have big seasons. Joshua Waugh. We were talking to Jordan Dume last week, I should say. Kind of the more obvious guy, Zach Dean. You know, the that sort of caliber of player. But you look around the league, and there's a few guys, and there always is from year to year, that are really coming out of their shell. And I know there's a couple that come to my mind right off the bat. We've talked about Justin Gill in Sherbrooke already, who just stepped into that top-line role with the Phoenix. He's got 31 points in 15 games and has not missed a beat playing on that top line with Joshua Waugh. Another guy that I think is worth bringing up is Daniel Borash. I watched the Huskies here in Halifax a couple of weeks ago. The guy he knows how to shoot the puck. He knows when to shoot the puck. And for Daniel Borash, the answer to that last question is often. If he thinks he has a sliver of an opportunity, the puck is probably coming off his stick and it's head towards a goaltender. He's, you know, the old infamous Cy Young commentary about goals versus assists. Mm-hmm. 14 goals, 7 assists. The guy knows how to shoot the puck, and he's really driving the offense for a team in Rwanda who's probably doing a little bit better than what some people expected so far this year. But, you know, it's always interesting to see these guys sort of rise to the occasion, maybe when you don't expect it, Jamie.
Yeah, and I've got a couple guys on my list who aren't necessarily near the top of the scoring leaderboard, but a couple guys who really improved their numbers compared to last year. One of them's Charlottetown, Michael Horth, who had 11 goals all of last year in 56 games, already has 9 goals this year. You talk about a Cy Young guy, 9 goals, 1 assist, 10 points in 16 games, so that's pretty impressive. I think he had 8 goals and no assists for a while. So an impressive start for him, and you know, a guy who was probably far down the depth chart than a deep Charlottetown team is having a much bigger role this year. Similar to Charles Savoie, who's always been kind of a depth guy, but now in Quebec, he's kind of flourishing offensively. I think we always kind of expected to see that eventually. He was a second-round pick by St. John a while ago, so good to see him having an offensively good, strong season. I know we talked about it on the show before, but 13 points in 17 games already this year. Only had 10 points in 49 games all of last year between St. John and Cape Breton.
Yeah, and you know, you talk specifically about Michael Horth. There's a guy who, seeing him last year a little bit with the Islanders, he obviously he's down on the depth chart. Good energy. He was an energy guy, and I think he's still that energy guy. but you know, being thrust into that more pronounced role, he's finding a way to find the back of the net. Now, obviously, he's not the guy that you're going to rely on for offense game in and game out. He's just not that kind of guy. And really, on Charlottetown this year, there are far fewer of those guys than there have been in years past. You know, Xavier Simoneau's gone, Brett Budgell's gone, you know, Patrick Gay, just to name a few. But he's finding a way to contribute, and I think that speaks as well to Michael Horst's abilities as it does to Jim Holton, whom, for my money, probably the best coach in the queue right now.
Definitely.
His ability to plug him into the right situations.
Yep.
And you know, with that, that breeds a lot of confidence. And sometimes all it takes is a couple of goals, and all of a sudden, within, you know, a short period of time, you got 5, 6, 7 under your belt, and you're rolling. And I think, in a way, that's kind of what's happened with Michael Horth. You know, the team needs to rely on different people for offense this year, and he has been more than reliable.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, great season for him. And, you know, we were kind of doing this exercise of guys who are surprising us, and it kind of brought to mind two guys who I've never really seen it comparable, but Danik Gauthier and Boko Imama in their overage seasons, two guys who were never known as offensive guys, and then they just suddenly broke out into 40 goal scorers when you kind of least expected it. So you just never know when guys might kind of bloom late in their careers.
Yeah, Boko Imama, probably still one of my favorite players in the last 10 years or so in the queue. You know, started up big Camo, as you well know, Jamie, made his way to St. John, was on the 2017 President Cup champion team. And in the beginning, you know, he was there for, you know, 10 or 15 goals a year and protection.
Mm-hmm.
That was the primary part of his resume. But, you know, if you're Danny Flynn in 2017 and you've got, you know, the Matthew Josephs and the Spencer Smallmans and the Matthew Highmores floating around, you know where the offense is coming from, or a 16-year-old Joe Valeno for that matter. And then all of a sudden you get 40 from Boko Imama. I mean, you've just got to be laughing at that point. It's like, okay, everything really is rolling well this year. We're probably in for something special. And sure enough, that team was. Let's take a look at our NHL team profile. We're in Calgary last week. We're going to go a little further north this week and talk about the Edmonton Oilers. So the Oilers, nobody in the queue right now that is drafted by the Oilers. Nobody in the NHL as of right now who is Q alumni with the Oilers. But there's at least a couple of names in there that will probably make a correction to the NHL part of my statement. A couple of guys who will be banging on the door, already banging on the door, in Bakersfield with the Condors, Xavier Borgol and Raphael Lavoie, along with goaltender Olivier Rodrigue.
Yeah, and Borgo is off to a really good start in his pro career. 6 points, 3 goals, and 9 games with Bakersfield. So I think we all know that he's probably on a little bit of a fast track to the NHL at some point. And if he's not, I wouldn't be shocked to see him be kind of a big piece in a potential trade for the Oilers down the road if they want some older guys. I'm sure Borgo's a wanted prospect around the league. Then Lavoie, I think a lot of us, you know, Will, you probably watched him a lot more than I did, but Lavoie is a guy that we watched in the queue for a long time, but hasn't quite found that scoring touch in the pro level, but we'll see if he can kind of find it over time. Maybe he'll turn into a guy who over time finds his game and finds his groove in the pro level, but hasn't quite found it yet. And then Rodrigue, another guy we mentioned, the devastating 2020 Wildcats team, probably could have had a President Cup ring, maybe even a Memorial Cup ring if that season hadn't been canceled by COVID.
Yeah, and, you know, to expand on Lavoie a little bit, I watched him for 4 years down here and developed into just a dynamic offensive threat. He always had that ability. He actually came up midway through a 16-year-old season and just took the ball and ran with it on what was still a very young Moosehead's team with guys like Jared McIsaac and Benoit Olivier Gruel. But the one thing I will say about Raphael Lavoie, and it may not be the most polite thing, but there were times up until about midway through the 2018-2019 season where he could be the most frustrating player to watch. on any team in the league. And it just, there were some nights where you wondered, you know, where, like, what Rafael Laval were you going to get? Obviously, he was a lot more offensively focused. There's a lot of guys like that, but you still wondered, okay, what are we going to get here tonight? Then he went to World Junior Camp in 2018 at Christmas time. And he was one of the first cuts. And he came back, and he became the game breaker for the Halifax Mooseheads leading into their season, the second half of their season, I should say, as Memorial Cup hosts. It was like a light switch came turned on for him. And he was, he went from being a guy that you could rely on more often than not, but not always, to consistent threat. We talked about the finish of the season Jordan Dume had. Rafael Laval, if you go back in the records in 2018, 2019, he had almost as impressive a finish to the season. He was their top scorer for the Mooseheads in the playoffs and scored one of the prettiest goals that you'll ever see in the Memorial Cup final. Fortunately, the Mooseheads fell to the Rouyn Noranda Huskies, but it wasn't for lack of effort from a guy like Rafael Laval, who ended up almost making the Oilers. He was actually on one of their final rosters just before they trimmed down at the beginning of the season. Wouldn't be surprised if him or Xavier Borgel, for that matter, get a call-up even as early as this year. Of course, you know, Rodrigue, a lot of time in Drummondville and Moncton, we're aware of what he's done, what unfortunately he didn't get a chance to do. And one name I got to throw out there, because I'll be honest with you, I didn't even realize this guy was still playing, let alone playing for the Bakersfield Condors, is Jason Demers, a guy who I watched in Moncton 17 years ago now. Played for Moncton, Victoriaville, defenseman. Was leading goal scorer or leading point getter amongst defensemen in the league his last year in junior back in 2008. Was a member of the Canadian Olympic team last year as well in 2022 at Pyeongchang, and ended up signing a PTO with the Oilers at the beginning of the 2022 season. And didn't make the Oilers, but ended up going to Bakersfield. So good to see him continuing on in his pro career. We'll talk briefly as well about the ECHL, only because there are a lot of guys. It's a laundry list. I was putting this together last night, and I had to stop typing for a while. I was starting to cramp up. There are a number of guys with ties to the queue. Some fairly recent, some from quite some time ago, but still, you know, banging on the door in the life of pro hockey, and some of them with a decent amount of success.
And for whatever reason, there has been a major pipeline between the Fort Wayne Comets and UNB over the past few years. Samuel McFalls, Matthew Budens, Benjamin Gagne, and another guy who's not on your list there, Will, Oliver Cooper, who just got called up to the AHL. All UMB guys, all Q guys, all who played in Fort Wayne. So major, major pipeline for whatever reason between UMB and Fort Wayne. And they've had a lot of success over the past couple of years too. So cool to see a lot of those guys having success with one of the marquee markets in the ECHL.
And a cool little connection there too in Fort Wayne with the Comets, which, by the way, that franchise has been around forever. They were in the old IHL. Now they're firmly entrenched as an ECHL franchise. But two guys, I'll bring them up, if only because it gives me the opportunity to bring up the dearly departed, rest in peace, Lewiston Maniacs, Stefano Gigliotti. Yes, moment of silence. Stefano Gigliotti and Olivier Legault. Stefano Gigliotti was a member of the 2007 President Cup winning team from Lewiston, still the only U.S. team to win the President Cup, or as QMJHL champions, one of only two U.S. franchises ever in the Q. But I can't help but wonder if there's a connection here between Stefano Gigliotti and Olivier Legault. If Olivier Legault is an assistant coach in Fort Wayne right now, and is a former teammate of Gigliotti's from Lewiston, their days in Lewiston. Legault was, well, I believe in his playing days, Legault was about 6'5" and 265 pounds. Wasn't there for offense. Was, if this was the NHL, probably wasn't going to win the Lady Bing. but
you've said enough. Yep.
Yes, but ended up with a decent little pro career that in the minor pros that spanned numerous teams and leagues, and is now an assistant coach. So these two hooking up from their old Lewiston days to hopefully bring a winner to Fort Wayne in their long hockey history. Let's take a look at the 2023 draft prospect of the week. And, it seems every week we're talking about Jordan Dume. Well, let's talk about one of his teammates. It's Matthew Katafor. He's a winger with the Mooseheads, more often than not been playing off and on the line with either Dume or on the second line, and has not looked out of place one bit after a very strong rookie season, Jamie.
Yeah, and kind of a slow start last year, but really turned it on in the second half. And from what I've been reading a lot about him, I think if he can kind of keep that consistency over the entire season, I think he'll probably steadily rise up the rankings, especially if he can keep producing at the pace he is offensively so far. So I think just if he can be steady all year, I think he'll be in a good position to get drafted. Kind of seems to be around the third round right now for this year's draft. Really becoming a big part of that Mooseheads core group, though. That's kind of expected to peak next year. Not really someone who, you leave thinking, wow, he was really flashy or really stood out, but just kind of a steady guy who is able to put up points.
Yeah, and the thing is with Matthew Katafor, it's the first thing that I noticed really when I first started to watch him last year. He was drafted sixth overall, by the way, by the Mooseheads in 2021. He very, very rarely makes a mistake with the puck on his stick. He has very good vision. He's got good instincts from that standpoint. He knows when he's in a good shooting position. He knows when he's in a better passing position. He'll find those lanes. He'll create those lanes if he needs to. Not afraid to dig a puck out of the corner when that opportunity arises. And it's just been consistent. He's consistent this year. He's got 21 points in 15 games. Had a point a game in the playoffs. And I think a few people started to take a little bit more notice of Matthew Katafor in that playoff, abbreviated playoff run, I should say, for the Mooseheads, when they took a vastly superior Agate Bathurst team to five games in a best-of-five first-round series and lost by in what was essentially a one-goal game in the clincher. But Matthew's a B-rated prospect, as you mentioned, Jamie. Probably about a third-rounder thereabouts at this point. Consistent points in 13 to 15 games, and is coming off a gold medal performance at the 2022 Hlinka-Gretzky Cup. And although he didn't show up on the scoreboard a lot, I think he had 1 point in the entire tournament. I know for the period that I was actually watching the tournament, you heard his name off the announcer's tongues quite a bit. Just proof that he was in the right spot at the right time. It may not have shown up at the scoreboard in that specific instance, but he was certainly generating, and the coaching staff was not afraid to put him out in most situations.
Yeah, and everything about him, it seemed like he had a really good tournament, and that strong play has carried over so far into the start of the Q season.
We're going to wrap things up here fairly soon. Just quickly touch on the player of the week. It's Riley Kidney of the Agate Bathurst Titans. 100 points last year with the Titan, and also a part of that team that eliminated the Halifax Mooseheads in round one back in the spring of 2022. He had 7 points in two games this past week as the Titan went 2-0, two goals and an assist against Blainville. That was on Friday night, and then the following night against Baycomo, two goals, two assists, first four-point game of the year. Also had the overtime winner in that one in a couple of very back-and-forth games, and Riley Kidney, a member of the gold medal winning entry at the World Juniors this past summer for Team Canada, a guy who maybe doesn't get as much recognition as some others of his caliber, but when you look at the score sheet at the end of the night, you generally see his name.
Yeah, a little bit of a underrated guy, which is a little strange for someone who's a Montreal prospect, but I'm sure as the season continues, maybe we'll see a little bit more on pace for another 100-point year. And I think probably a guy who we're going to be talking about for many years, because the Agate Bathurst Titans rebuild will probably be centered around a potential Riley Kidney trade. So I imagine he'll be a very wanted man at the trade deadline.
Yeah, definitely. He's got the pedigree, and if the price is right, no doubt we could see something – in the way of movement there. So, of course, Riley Kidney on the team of the week, as you would expect, along with the aforementioned Ivan. Joshua Waugh rounds out the forward core there. David Spatchek and Nicolas Savoie of Sherbrooke and Quebec, respectively, by the way. Will the Quebec Ramparts ever lose another game? I don't know. Points in, I believe. Yeah, no, that doesn't seem like something that's going to happen this year. But points in, I believe, 13 straight at this point. And those two defensemen are on the team of the week, as well as Victoriaville goaltender Nathan Darvaux. And just quickly, let's talk about a couple of matchups coming up this week. One's taking place tomorrow night. The Mooseheads are hosting the Moncton Wildcats. Both of those teams were in the latest CHL Top 10. Those rankings will probably be refreshed by the time this podcast comes out. But as of last week, Halifax was 9th. Moncton was an honorable mention. Gatineau and Rouyn-Noranda, two teams that are only separated by 1 point in the Western Conference. They'll face off on Thursday night, as will Victoriaville and Blainville-Boisbriand. And that's part of a home-and-home. The return match is in Victoriaville on Friday between two teams that are also jockeying for position. In the case of the Blainville-Boisbriand Armada, a team that's looking to get something going after some relatively lofty expectations earlier this year.
Yeah, it seems like they're kind of figuring it out, and some of their better players are starting to pick it up now, so that's good to see. You know, Josh Lawrence had a hat trick this past weekend. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to this game on Tuesday, Moncton-Halifax. That's going to be a big showdown, probably going to be a pretty good rivalry this year and next year as well. Another game I'm looking forward to that on Friday, Drummondville and Moncton, two teams who are hot right now, going head to head.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be a pretty action-packed week, as it normally is in the queue. And we thank you for taking some of your time to listen to us as we try and fill you in on all the news that has taken place and the news yet to come. For Jamie Tozer, I'm Will McLaren, and we thank you once again for listening to yet another edition of the Hockey News on the Queue. We will catch you next week.